during our live stream, there was a lot of talk about Dr. Judy Mikovits. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. Mm. I've dug into a lot of research about what's going on over the weekend. It's an interesting story, and I think we'll do a video on what's going on there, especially with Fauci. The more you research Fauci, the more you see what a absolute snake he is. But we'll have to do something, Alexander, definitely on BitChute and other platforms, because anything that we do on YouTube regarding this topic, I don't think it'll stay up on the site for more than 24 hours, if that.
If and then that.
Taken down. Yeah.
If so. That, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is a point that we need to make, which is that our YouTube channel is watched not just by our viewers, but by other people also. Whereas on BitChute, we can say lots of things which we're not able to say.
Yeah, so we'll prepare something there. We'll have to discuss it to see how we'll go about it, to prepare something there on BitChute, something a BitChute exclusive or something. Yeah. But it's a fascinating story, and I don't have any kind words for Dr. Fauci.
Nor do I, by the way. We can talk about that, but I don't have either.
Yeah. So so let's get to a different topic then, and that is the topic of Venezuela. Alexander, any more info on what happened in Venezuela with the Rambo Bay of Pigs style of assault? I don't know even how to describe the assault that took place, but any other news on that?
I think it describes it exactly. I think now we've got a fairly clear picture about what actually happened, and I think it's now very clear that this was cooked up by Venezuelan opposition leaders, almost certainly involving Guaido himself. In other words, the US government, Donald Trump, I am quite sure were not involved. I doubt even, by the way, that the US Department of Defense was. What seems to have happened is that there was this madcap scheme that they were going to try and break the deadlock. They wanted to try and bring this group in, and they were going to try and capture Maduro, of all people, and use that to sort of bring down the whole Venezuelan thing crashing down. And the whole premise upon which this operation was based was, again, that there would be military units within the Venezuelan armed forces who would be cooperating with the group of opposition leaders, some of whom are military officers or ex-military officers, and Guaido himself, who were behind all of this. In fact, what happened was that the Venezuelan military entirely remained loyal to Maduro. And the moment they arrived or came close to the coast, they found the Venezuelans waiting for them, which is a good sign, by the way, that the Venezuelans had either been tipped off about this operation, or more likely, they had been partly involved in provoking. In other words, they had spread stories amongst the opposition that there were dissident military units which could be called upon in order to sort of test the opposition with madcap adventures like this. So another disaster for Guaido, another disaster for the opposition leaders around him. It's given Maduro more to talk about and more to criticize Donald Trump for, but I don't think we should take this incident too seriously.
So it could have been a setup
I rather think
could
so.
Have,
it
could have
it
been.
Could have been. I'm going to say something, by the way. I mean, Venezuelan intelligence apparently is largely run by Cuban intelligence. And the Cubans have a very sophisticated intelligence organization, which has a long history of playing these kind of very intricate and clever games. So that seems to me the most plausible explanation for this affair. Now, if you want to read a detailed account of it, Scott Ritter, who was the leader of one of the inspection teams to Iraq before the war there, and who made a huge impression on many people, including me, by speaking out against the war and saying Iraq didn't have these weapons. He's done a very, very effective breakdown of this whole operation, based, I'm sure, on information he must have been getting from all sorts of people, and no doubt his own research. But if you want to understand the actual details of this operation, you should look at what he's been writing. The one thing I would say is he believes the US government was at some level involved. I don't. I really don't believe it. I think if the CIA had been involved, we would have been looking at a completely different operation carried out on a much bigger scale. I mean, you wouldn't have had about 12 people coming along in a boat to Venezuela thinking that they could carry out a revolution there. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Any chance Pompeo or Elliot Abrams? I think Elliot Abrams is still in the administration, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Very much so. And Pompeo, of course, absolutely. But when I say the administration, look, I would not be surprised if some of these people picked up the phone, talked to Elliot Abrams and perhaps even Pompeo, but more likely Abrams, because he's the person they're in contact with, and say, look, we're getting all this info, all these people from Venezuela, from within the army. They're telling us, you know, that we've had enough of Maduro. We're ready to come over to your side. We're prepared. We're going to send this team there. We've made these contacts with this mercenary group in the US, these Soldiers of Fortune, and they'll be leading us. And I can just see very easily someone like Abrams green lighting it. But the Department of Defense and the CIA, I'm confident, were not involved.
All right. Let's move on from that strange story and discuss Syria. Alexander, what's going on in Syria?
Yeah, it's been very interesting because, first of all, there's been a sort of slowdown in military operations. I mean, if you remember at the start of this year, the Syrian army recaptured a large part of southern Idlib province. And then there was this deal done with Turkey. And it seems that the M5 motorway to Aleppo is now open and traffic is going up, going through it to Aleppo from central Syria. And the Russians and the Turks are patrolling the other highway, the M4 highway. The Turks, by the way, have had some clashes with some of the jihadi fighters they've been sponsoring because of that. But overall, the military situation has been rather quiet. And this has led to some questions about what's been going on in Syria. And a series of rather strong articles started to appear in parts of the Russian media from all sorts of people well connected with the Russian political establishment, foreign office, foreign ministry people, ex-diplomats, ex-analysts for the Russian foreign ministry, some Russian business people too. And they were saying that what Syria now needs to do is it needs to focus more on sorting out its economic and administrative affairs because there's too much corruption in the country. And this is all very strange, and a lot of people were wondering what this is all about. And lo and behold, what we then learn is that the Prime Minister of Syria has just been dismissed, and there's large allegations of corruption swirling around him. So it seems that the Russians put pressure on Assad to get rid of this man, who they regard as corrupt, and probably this was made a condition force Russia to continue to provide financial and economic assistance. I'm sure it was not a condition to providing military assistance. That is a completely different issue. The Russians would have continued to do that anyway. But for reconstruction help, which Syria needs, the Russians, I'm sure, said that this person, who apparently regularly pocketed commissions and bribes, they wanted him out. Now, what I would say is, of course, commissions and bribes by well-connected government leaders are nothing unusual in the Middle East. So to the Russians, he may have seemed a very corrupt person, may not have been seen in quite the same way within Syria itself. But one way or the other, he's gone. He is connected, it seems, to Assad through family ties, again, a very common thing in the Middle East. So this has created some tensions within Syria itself.
All right. And we do have some news which is related to Turkey as well, Syria. The Greek foreign minister, Nikos Dendias, has appointed a special envoy to Syria for Greece. Paul Antonopoulos, the journalist, great journalist, tweeted out, "Congratulations to the foreign minister. This is a wonderful first step in restoring relations with the friendly and brotherly country of Syria. We knew you would begin the process of fixing mistakes made by previous governments. We know in time relations will be fully restored. So Greece seems to be moving in the direction of fully restoring relations with Syria. And of course, that brings us to Turkey, because while Greece considers re-entering the arena in Syria, we are sure that Turkey will not be pleased with that.
No, Turkey will not be pleased. In fact, I mean, for Erdogan, that will be a red rag to a bull, frankly. He will be furious if he sees the Greeks coming in, just as he is probably thinking about moving out. Now, he has to, it seems to me, start seriously thinking about moving out, because, of course, what's happened also over the last couple of weeks is that the financial crisis in Turkey has now returned with a vengeance. There's been mounting pressure on the Turkish currency, the lira. You may remember that back in 2018, we had a whole crisis with the lira, and Erdogan was bailed out at the last moment by China and by the Emir of Qatar, who both sent, you know, vast sums of money to Turkey to hold the line with the lira. And that sort of stabilized the situation, but it's never really resolved itself. It's never worked out properly. And now the lira has been coming under immense pressure again. The Turkish economy has been in recession for some time. Its contraction is now accelerating. And it seems that Erdogan, rather than let the lira float, which would mean float to crash downwards, he's been throwing away Turkey's already very limited foreign exchange reserves on trying to keep it up. So he's running out of money very fast. There's even talk that he may have to call on the IMF, which would be an extraordinary thing for him. He apparently, or rather his central bank did, they asked the United States Federal Reserve Board for a swap agreement. That's an agreement whereby the US Federal Reserve Board provides Turkey with foreign exchange, the Turkish central bank with foreign exchange, to keep currencies moving and to keep liquidity going. The US Federal Reserve Board apparently refused. So Erdogan is in a very tight position. It's doubtful whether the Emir of Qatar, who's got problems of his own because of the oil price crash, is going to be quite so forthcoming with our foreign reserves this time. And it's debatable also whether the Chinese will be so willing to come to his rescue. So it seems to me that one way or the other, he's got to start thinking about all these very expensive commitments that he's making in all sorts of places. Libya, obviously, Syria even more. He's having problems with some of the jihadi fighters he's been backing there, who do not like the agreement he reached with Putin at the start of this year to basically withdraw from southern Idlib. So now I think he's under even more pressure than he has been. But as we both know, because, you know, he's our neighbor, Erdogan cornered is Erdogan very dangerous. And he's always likely to do all sorts of things. And this news, which, by the way, I didn't know until we went on to this program, until we did this news that Greece is now starting to make moves towards reopening relations with Syria, which will be a first, I think, amongst EU member states. And a very positive step, by the way. Greece should be commended for doing it. That will really annoy him. That will annoy him a lot. Greece, for our viewers to know, has always had good relations with the major Arab countries. And Greece has always had good relations with Syria as well. Those relations were basically cast aside out of EU solidarity and, you know, NATO and Western solidarity. So it's good that Greece has once again taken this step.
Yeah, well, the EU and NATO forced Greece to cut relations with Syria.
Absolutely.
Because they were looking to gut the country and for regime change. And Greece
had no choice. I mean, it's been very clear about this. I mean, there's always a choice, but it would have been very difficult for Greece to withstand that. I mean, it would have been Tsipras, who, you know, we don't think much of, but it would have been very, very difficult for Tsipras to stand out and say, you know, I'm going to keep an embassy in Damascus when Washington and Brussels and Berlin and London and Paris are all telling me to close it. So, you know, I don't blame him too much for that. But congratulations to the current government in Greece, to Mitsotakis' government, for taking the first important steps to change that policy. And it shows that, you know, in the sort of permanent diplomatic war that Greece is involved in with Turkey, Greece is, you know, getting one is getting ahead now, because, as I said, Turkey's going to have to, I think, reconsider its involvement in Syria, just as Greece is reestablishing it. It won't please Erdogan at all, but I don't see what options he has.
Well, the option for Erdogan and for Turkey is the option that every country, I think, is undertaking now with the CV crisis, and that is to look inwards. So, you know, we've said it many times that Erdogan, you know, he overstretched his capabilities and the country's capabilities, and these adventures in Libya and especially in Syria and elsewhere, the East Med and in other parts of the world, were foolish, and now it's coming back to bite him in the ass, and well deserved, because, you know, he just made very dumb geopolitical moves, very stupid geopolitical moves.
Very stupid geopolitical moves, which have put in jeopardy the very real economic achievements and social achievements that Turkey has achieved over the last 20 years, principally, though not entirely, under his rule. What he needs to do is to do what our previous Turkish leaders like Kemal Atatürk used to do, which is to maintain a good friendly policy with all the neighboring countries. He hasn't done that, and it's caused Turkey no end of trouble.
And look within, and look within.
And look, and look within
for every country.
Look within and look within. Follow a good neighbor policy, follow a good neighbor policy with the Russians, with the Iranians, with the Arab world, with Greece, with Cyprus, and with the Syrians. So, I mean, if he does that, better for Turkey, better for the Turkish people, ultimately better for him. Though whether he's able to understand that is another matter.
Yeah. All right. Three interesting topics. Mm. The world continues to move, irregardless of this CV.
Oh, yes.
Stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, humanity hasn't stopped, and international affairs haven't stopped with it. The players may change from time to time, but the game goes on.
All right. Thank you, Alexander. Let's get moving.